Hello, everyone. This is JVL here with my Bulwark colleague, Sam Stein, and we're switching things up today. We have good news for a change. We have a decision from the District Court of Massachusetts in the case of the American Association of University Professors against Marco Rubio as Secretary of State. And this decision comes from Judge William G. Young, a rock-ribbed Republican, a Reagan appointee. 161 pages of hot fire. Sam, how excited were you when you saw this thing?
You know me. Thrilled. Could barely contain my excitement. I guess that it's some background would be helpful here. Basically, if people remember, the pro-Palestinian students were getting abducted by ICE. They were here on student visas. Marco Rubio was making sure they were deported. The justification was, well, they don't believe in America or America first, so we don't have to have them here in our country.
National security threats.
Because they were
acting contrary to the national security interests of the United States, Sam.
And in one case, I think the entire issue was like a single op-ed that the student had
co-written.
Co-bylined
op-ed in a student newspaper.
And so this has been kind of working its way through the legal system. And this judge, it's not just the rebuke that Judge Young issued, because Judge Young has been at the center of a couple of these issues now. He's been overseeing some of the funding freezes that the Trump administration has done with Harvard. It's the way in which he did it. Now, I would say some of this was like gratifying to read, but some of it was actually like kind of chilling. Both the fact that he felt the need to write it and that the administration's response to it seems to be like a big giant fuck you. We're just going to keep doing what we're doing. I could get to that in a second. But it's worth noting, he wrote this as a response to an anonymous letter that he had received. And the anonymous letter he had received said, "Trump has pardons and tanks. What do you have?" And he responds with a little message. He says, "Dear Mr. and Mrs. Anonymous, alone I have nothing but my sense of duty. Together, we, the people of the United States, you and me, have our magnificent Constitution. Here's how that works out in a specific case." And then the opinion flows from that. And I thought that was like kind of interesting, kind of different, definitely different.
Persuasive.
Yeah.
It's funny. Like the note is a tweet. Right. Just in longhand. And he just responds not like a shit poster, but like a serious patriot and legal scholar.
And he actually posts the note. So again, like Twitter, it's like the attachment to it. And, when I read it, the first 135 pages are, dismantling the case. But then the last 12 pages or so are just him sort of really undressing Donald Trump. And like in a way that I think, probably was gratifying for him. It's become sort of this new fashion for judges to try to one-up them each other about how badly they can rebuke Trump. But in this case, it was like kind of dark underneath it. It's like we've really entered. It was like he'd overdosed on JVL columns. He's like, we've entered a dark place.
I mean, he's not wrong. So the reason this was American Association of University Professors was because this is an attempt by Marco Rubio to revoke visas for some professors who are pro-Palestinian, putting that in scare quotes. And what Judge Young is saying with this is that the real test on this case is, do First Amendment rights apply to people who are lawful residents of the United States, so non-citizen lawful residents? And his contention is, by any reasonable reading of the Constitution, the answer is yes.
Right. And it's the Scalia. It's the Scalia contention.
Right. Yeah. And so he talks here. I mean, we'll just read some quotes from it. He says to Marco Rubio and Kristi Noem, "You acted in concert to misuse the sweeping powers of their respective offices to target non-citizen pro-Palestinians for deportation, primarily on account of their First Amendment-protected political speech. They did so in order to strike fear into similarly situated non-citizen pro-Palestinian individuals, proactively and effectively curbing lawful pro-Palestinian speech and intentionally denying such individuals, including the plaintiffs here, the freedom of speech that is their right." He says it's perhaps the most important case to fall within the jurisdiction of this district court.
I mean, it goes on from there. Like, yeah, there's parts where he just directs it to the president. Says the president's palpable misunderstanding that the government cannot simply seek retribution for speech she disdains poses a great threat to Americans' freedom of speech. It is at this juncture that the judiciary has robustly rebuffed the president and his administration. It says, I fear that President Trump believes the American people are so divided that today they will not stand up, fight for, and defend our most precious constitutional values so long as they are lulled into thinking their own personal interests are not affected. Is he correct? I mean, as I read it, he's saying, I thought in your quote, the most chilling word was effectively that they've done so, as in he feels like they've already been successful. And in here, he's just making the case that the act of retribution that Trump is so publicly engaged in is itself a threat to the Constitution. It's not even the deportation. It's the threat of retribution itself. And I think he's right, honestly. I think people are self-censoring. And the question of whether that's, you know, a form of infringement on the freedom of speech, I'm not a lawyer, but I mean, you can...
100% they are.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is like, I can just tell you because I know people who have friends of mine who have jobs, you know, in the civil service, in government, who are like, no, I can't leave a comment on the Bulwark's website because I got to keep my head down, right? Or, you know, I can't go to the Bulwark Live event because I don't want to bump into somebody who like recognizes me from work and can cause me trouble. We have Pete Hegseth talking yesterday about how they are scrutinizing the personal communications and social media histories of even junior officers as they evaluate who can be promoted and not promoted because they are looking for loyalty. I mean, this is all, it's all real. And
let me just give you a quick update on the Hegseth front. Breaking news from the Washington Post, the Pentagon is planning to require thousands of uniformed officials, and civilian personnel to sign non-disclosure agreements and submit to random polygraph testing. There you go.
I mean, you know, like they're speedrunning. I'll say fascism. I won't say the other N word, the third N word we're not supposed to say. And we wind up in a place where it is important to understand, and Judge Young understands this clearly, this isn't really about non-citizens' rights, right? I mean, this is all about eventually drawing lines about who real citizens are. And that's why you can't understand this case except also in the context of the birthright citizenship case.
Explain that.
So this is the government gets to decide what is acceptable speech from people who are non-citizens.
Right.
And also the government gets to decide who's a citizen.
Right.
Right. And this is where it all happens. And this is, again, go read through your Hannah Arendt. And the idea that you can render people stateless is like at the heart of totalitarian oppression.
Right. You create another class of stateless people. And then you say, oh, wait, now we're going to sift through all your social media feeds.
And it's, man, like, it's just bad. And the response of, DHS spokesperson Trisha McLaughlin was that Judge Young has stoked the embers of hatred,
right,
with his ruling.
Well, I thought the State Department response was almost worse. From Tommy Pickett, he said, quote, the United States is under no obligation to allow foreign aliens to come to our country, commit acts of anti-American, pro-terrorist, and anti-Semitic hate or incite violence. We will continue to revoke the visas of those who put the safety of our citizens at risk. I mean, it just... I read that as him saying pound sand, right? Like, and yeah, it goes back to the initial anonymous note. Trump has pardons and tanks. What do you have?
So I got a question for you. Is there a tactical mistake on the part of MAGA here in trying to dress all this up as attempt to really get people on not supporting Israel enough? Because we are at a moment where for the first time, you know, as long as I can remember, Israel is now underwater in American public opinion,
right,
with a majority of Americans now saying the United States should not be helping these people. What they're doing over there, what Bibi Netanyahu is doing, looks at best really, really bad and at worst like ethnic cleansing. And
yeah,
like this could keep getting worse, couldn't it? In terms of just public opinion?
Of course, yeah, 100%. I'd like to think people draw the distinction between anti-Israel and anti-Semitic. I'm not sure they do all the time. I do think from like a, just a strictly political standpoint, like it's very, it's unobjectionably true that even MAGA is deeply divided on support for Israel. And of course, it's also true that there is a profound strain of anti-Semitism within MAGA. I mean, the popularity
MAGA's even deeply divided on anti-Semitism.
Yeah, I was going to say, yes, the popularity of Nick Fuentes is very clear. And in fact, I'm going to engage with Will Summer on this, but like the new thing now is that because Nick Fuentes has said, no, Charlie Kirk wasn't killed by Israel, there are people now accusing Nick Fuentes of being in the pocket of Jews. So we're like, we're in pretty deep waters here. I do think there's a risk here. I think, and it's not just because MAGA will be divided, like that whole podcast bro sphere, whatever you want to call it. Like they've been speaking out about this stuff too. Like you look at Rogan clips, you look at some other clips from these folks. They're like, why are we, what is it that we're doing here on college campuses? Like, isn't this what we're supposed to be against? Like, policing campus culture to a degree that you're actually deporting kids. Like, is that really where we want to go? Now, is it enough to, you know, tell Marco Rubio and Tony Pigott or whatever, Tommy Pigott, like, chill out? I don't know. I do fear that these rulings from judges like this are just almost like the last gasp of people saying, hey, we're going down a dark path. And then by the time people read it, we're too far down.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah.
And also, Supreme Court will probably overrule Young. Let's just be candid about that.
Let's be real about it. Yeah.
Yeah. This is a case where one of my, and this is failures of imagination, right? So one of the things that I talked about a lot with Sarah, our colleague Sarah Longwell, in the very early days of Biden's administration was, what are things that Democrats could do to Trump-proof the future? So in other words, to
remember the column.
Trump comes back to power, right? And a thing which it is now clear they could have done, but which occurred to no, even me, who was like, you know, Mr. Catastrophizing, was they could have gone and started clamping down on the discretionary powers of people like the Secretary of State to remove visas like this, right? This is, I mean,
never would have occurred to me,
but honestly, it never would have occurred. And this is the problem, right? You can't anticipate everything that a fascist will do, because they'll find something. Even if we had gone and Trump-proofed that, right? The system is designed to assume that the person, the people in the system are not fascists.
And it's also like, this is totally unrelated, but it gets to the point you're making. Like this morning, for instance, Russ Vought, the OMB chair, announced they're just going to hold back $18 billion in funding for New York City infrastructure projects. And it has nothing to do with the shutdown, because his whole rationale as well, these are unconstitutional DEI problems. It's like, you just made up a pretext. Like this thing has been going on for 10 months of the administration. This thing has been going on and you never once said jack shit about it until now. So if they're just going to make up pretexts for these things in the courts, you know, the lower courts might slap them on the wrist, but the Supreme Court says, well, you have it in your authority.
It's there. Yeah.
It's like you can play whack-a-mole, but at some point, that's where the pinch point is. And that's just that.
Yeah. At the end of the day, the reality is, if Americans tolerate this, and they don't even need to approve of it, they just need to barely tolerate it, by which I mean like the disapproval is at a manageable net. So, you know, it could even be 51% disapprove, 44% approve, right?
Sure.
It's only if you're at that place, then you're going to keep getting this.
Yeah.
And
I think that's right.
There ain't no solution except the American people being better.
Well, that and maybe it's not a solution because no one can bring it about, but natural events, right? Like a catastrophe of some variety, an outbreak,
maybe a
financial
pandemic,
collapse.
Which convinced us all to be our best selves and made us realize that we're all in the same boat together. Maybe that would do it.
Let's not go down that path again. But yeah, no, it's true. It's something you think about. It's like, how do you get out of this cycle? And, you know, the most logical thing would be an election that goes the opposite way. But what if they fuck around with that, you know?
And even if it goes the opposite way, it's not going to go far enough the opposite way. to prevent us from getting back here again, right? There will be a recession the next time. Let's pretend there's another Democrat in power, right? We have a Democratic president, right? So what? Every Democratic president has to be absolutely perfect all the time. They can never make any mistakes. They can never have a recession happen right. 9 months before their reelect or something like that, because otherwise 40,000 voters in Wisconsin are going to choose fascism again.
Yeah.
That, if you're in that position, man, the country's already gone. Right. It's because wow. people are basically okay with it.
How did we end up here again?
Because it's me. This is where I always end up. Oh, Sam. This is why you and I don't do too many of these things together.
Nah. I leave feeling really depressed.
I know. But if you want to feel better, go read some. We'll put a link in the comments. This Judge Young thing, it's good stuff.
Take care, bud.
All right, everybody. We are sold out of tickets to all of our shows on the fall tour, except for October 8th in Washington, D.C. I was on a call yesterday planning out what we've got in store for you. It's going to be fun. Obviously, JVL will be there, so there'll be Elements of Darkness. We're also bringing in Sarah McBride for a conversation with Sarah Longwell that I'm super excited for. Maybe we might get Will Sommer up to talk about some of the crazy shit that's happening on the MAGA ride. I've got some other plans in store for you, so it's not too late. Get your tickets now. Washington, D.C., October 8th. You go to thebulwark.com/events, thebulwark.com/events. I hope to see you all there. It's at the Lincoln Theater. Awesome venue. Appreciate them for hosting us. And so I hope to see you all in Washington, October 8th.